All right, so you're listening to this podcast right now, London is Blue, and guess what? We host our podcast on anchor.fm. That's right. If you're looking to host your own podcast, this is the easiest free way to get started. It's got a content creation tool, allows you to record and the podcast right from a phone. That's right. Don't even need a computer, but you can do it there too. They'll also help you distribute it, which is probably the most challenging part. You don't want to have to mess with that. They got you covered. You can get it right on a Spotify and Apple Podcasts, as well as any other place podcasts are found. And you know what? You can monetize it too. Make a little cash for sharing your great content with the world. It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one individual place. So you know what? Head over to your app store, download the Anchor app, or head to anchor.fm to get started if you're ready to launch your podcast and make it happen.
Hi, this is Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
I'm Pat Nevin.
I'm Mason Mount. You're listening to the London is Blue podcast.
All right, Chelsea fans, welcome back to yet another episode of the London is Blue podcast. As always, your host Brandon, joined by Nick and Dan. Gentlemen, thank you for getting up and getting after this one. It is another Chelsea women's match review. And Dan, we're getting smart. We know that we shouldn't do this on our own. We're on a learning journey as well. So we brought in someone who can help explain what's going on, educate us a little bit, and our audience, so we can become more engaged in this exciting team that Emma Hayes is putting together.
Well, yeah, so we had to go to someone who was actually at the ground yesterday. So Katie joins us from The Telegraph and actually going to be a part of The Athletic coming up here in October. So Katie, first time cap on the show. Welcome. We're excited to have you.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Yeah. Well, look, everyone, Katie, like I said, has a lot of background in this. She's going to be the expert, going to fill in the gaps, especially when you're there. We know that there's a lot of things you miss if you're watching it on TV. But I do want to point that out. You can watch it on TV. NBC has picked up the rights in America. I just logged in on the app and was able to watch it while I was out and about. It was brilliant. And then even the FA player was giving radio commentary as well. So the accessibility for the women's team is better than it's ever been. Like, this is the time to start watching this team, I promise. So again, it was the opening match of the WSL season for Chelsea, taking on Manchester United, and the start, in case you missed it, of our title defense. Dan, you like doing these three-word match reviews. So really quick, Nick, what do you have to say for your three-word match review?
We will get into it, but have to finish. Three words.
That is true. That is a good one. Dan, what about you?
So it is the first match of the WSL season for us. So I just went with starting off slow. So not the quickest start to the season.
That's true. I put room for improvement, you know, not in a bad way, just objectively. Katie, I know we're dropping this on you. What was your kind of recap for this one to give you a little overview?
Would you give me about 10 seconds to think about it there? Probably not perfect yet.
I like that.
Okay.
On the spot, yet, too. Right.
Because she said yet. So that means the expectation is there that this will be a finely tuned machine and clicking. So it was in the WSL this past Sunday, September 7th, at Lee Sports Village. Final score was United 1, Chelsea 1. Sad to lose the 2 points at the end. But Sam Kerr getting the goal for Chelsea, Dan. I know you have her on the back of your kit. And we gave you a hard time in the Community Shield for cursing her and not letting her score. So I'm sure you must be able to sleep a lot better knowing that it's not you.
Well, now that there's not going to be this ongoing theme this season of the Jersey curse or the Dan Jersey curse, I feel a lot better about that.
Yeah, I think Discord still might put that on you. But hey, run us through the lineups real quick, and then we'll get into the stats for this one.
Yeah, so the way that Emma Hayes lined up was in a 4-3-3. We had Telfoyd come in for Berger. It was the main change between the two matches that we've seen. Mjelde, Bright, Eriksen, and Anderson at the back. We saw Lepoltz, Ingle, and G as their kind of midfield. Kirby, Gael Wrighton, and then Sam Kerr up top. Unused substitutes of Blundell, Fleming, Charles, Spence, and Orman. We saw Harder, Cuthbert, England, and Carter all come in. Point of order is that the WSL did keep the five substitutes rule, unlike the men's game. So you will see much more rotation this season.
So, Katie, I see that Chelsea had about twice as many substitutes as United. Like, is that just because we have a bigger roster?
Both. I mean, I think that Man United were, they had Lucy Sanifor suspended and then a couple of injuries as well. But I think that you are going to see a lot this season, that Chelsea are going to have a bigger, you call it roster, we would call it squad over in England, a far bigger squad than a lot of teams, because you did have, I think, Birmingham field, Jamie Lee Napier, the Chelsea loanee, who'd only signed for them earlier that day, signed for them because their squad is so shallow. So I think it's a real problem that we have with the women's game in general over here.
All right. Well, that's something to keep paying attention to. I think, obviously, we all know that Emma Hayes is really looking for the UCL and for the Champions League glory, and having a bigger squad will help with that. From a stats line, just some high-level stuff. Chelsea was 16 shots, United's 11, 5 on target to their 3. We had 48% possession. We had 5 fouls to their 8. They had 2 cautions, 2 offsides for us, 3 for them, 5 corners apiece. Nick, 16 shots, 5 on goal, little under a third of them actually reaching target. Missed chances, a bit of rust, quality defending. Like, it was just not what you wanted to see, and I'm sure not what Emma would expect, even this early in the season.
No. The 16 shots and 5 on target is eerily reminiscent of the first team men's side, if you remember any of our match reviews this season. But I think the... where I would start this one is it was just a bit of a sloppy performance from what we're used to from Emma Hayes' side. I mean, the passing, especially through the midfield, I tweeted this at halftime, and I would love Katie's perspective on this, but it seemed like United had a really effective press on Chelsea, that it was making passes out of the back a little uncomfortable, and they had set up tactically to kind of neutralize the midfield three of Ingle, Loopholes, and G, as to not, you know, kind of let them run the show. And I think what that caused in my mind, Katie, was the passing up the channels was not as effective, at least getting there. Once we kind of broke through the press, it was a little bit more effective. And certainly Sam Kerr has chances to score that she will put away at some point in the season. But it seemed to me that the neutralizing of Chelsea's midfield was kind of the big problem on the day.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair. And I think the better Chelsea performances that we've seen from them this season and last were the ones where Sophie Ingle and G were really able to make a difference. And I think that's where they kind of met their match a little bit, particularly in the second half with Jackie Groenen coming on, who's the Netherlands midfielder, who's really the kind of one of United's star players. On a battle, who was obviously the fullback who was up against Kirby and Mielder in the first half and sort of didn't get a look in, and then reverted to giving as good as she got in the second half, and was a real difficult kind of proposition for Mielder. So I think that them coming out tactically, attempting to not only nullify Chelsea, but having a game plan that then gave them the platform to really exploit those same areas that they'd sort of were starting to one up Chelsea in, if you like, really was kind of the key for their second half success.
Dan, I know from your kind of perspective, you know, we've seen that I've drawn loose comparisons that Emma is building her team the same way Frank is. A lot of firepower. We're focusing on attack. We're going to just bury teams. And I think part of that is when you're able to start with Sam Kerr, widely regarded as one of the best strikers in the world, Gurriton, who came with a huge profile. We all at Chelsea know Fran Kirby and love her for everything she's done. But then on the bench, you have Bethany England, player of the season. Aaron Cuthbert, Pernilla Harder, like just those three names without even continuing down. It's like you can chop and change. And I think that she was able to make like for like subs. And I think we're seeing that this is the system. This is the mold they want to play. But again, for her to be able to dip into that bench and still not get it, I'm sure she's going to be a little bit frustrated with this group of women and the fact that they just weren't able to get the second, third, or fourth goal. I mean, I think Emma said they should have had a few in the first half alone.
Well, that's right. And I don't think you're going to find many people who would disagree with her, given some of the shots. I think it was, I guess I look at it as a couple of issues. One, I think United's defense actually was really good at making it difficult for our team to kind of play into where we were looking for. I think Earps actually came up really strong with a couple of key saves to kind of nullify some really good attacking play, particularly with Wright and Kirby delivering some really nice kind of crosses or kind of balls into the path of Kerr. And I think the other thing that, you know, we might want to talk about is just how long this game has been away. You know, when we think about it, it was when we played the Community Shield, it was 182 days since the Chelsea women's team had taken the field. This is the first game in the WSL. It's been a pretty long time coming back. And I guess, how much would you, Katie, attribute this maybe to like rustiness in the fact that like these teams haven't been playing competitive football for a period of time? Like, is that something you're kind of considering with this performance?
Yeah, and I mean, Ella Hayes very much said the same thing, and it was kind of a universal sentiment among all of the managers this weekend. I mean, Gareth Taylor, the Manchester City manager, said the same thing, and Gemma Davis, the Aston Villa manager, who was obviously City's opponents that weekend. And it's sort of a fairly common theme that we're seeing come up again. And I think you saw it with even in the men's game in Project Restart, that those first few games, because we had football on television like every single day, and people were saying, oh gosh, I don't remember it being this kind of slow, and it just felt a little bit different. You've got, remember women's football, Leigh would particularly have a very vocal crowd and quite an intimate, there are a lot smaller venues, and the crowd when they get going can really feel like they're on top of you, and it can be a very partisan, fiery atmosphere, and that element is missing as well. So I think that there are a few things that they're sort of adjusting to, not only being back, but how are they playing in these arenas that are very different behind closed doors without crowds. I think there are a few little things off the field that probably may be a little bit more disconcerting for players. So I think that they're are going to be a few teething issues as we get back into sort of a full program of fixtures and getting used to women's football being back after such a long time away.
Well, I mean, it's been a long time away, and it's kind of like they've had the weirdest break of this whole thing. Obviously, the men came back and played, the women didn't. Chelsea were crowned champions by what was like a half of a point or something like that, as they like, as they calculated everything out. So it's definitely been, you know, hard, because I think what a lot of the pundits talked about was you don't know where in your training model you should be. Should we be ramping up? Should we be tapering? Should we be working on technical fitness? And so now it's all kind of just hit and they're able to go. And so, you give them a little bit, right? But I can tell you that Emma Hayes' expectation standards have not dropped. And so this will not be acceptable. And that is quite all right. But Nick, a player who is back this season and looking like almost a new signing is one of your favorite players on the women's side, and that is Francesca Kirby. We love Super Fran. It's been a long break for some players. It's been an even longer break for her. You talked about it specifically in the last one that, you know, she had had her break for her health and medical reasons. This was her first competitive match in the WSL since November of the previous year, but she looked absolutely match ready. She looks hungry. She looks competitive. She looks aggressive. And it's a little bit of a different role for her. She used to be the out and out striker. Now she's playing off to the right a little bit, but she looks humble and hungry.
Yeah, I mean, in our men's preview, I make a ridiculous assertion about number of assists for one Kai Havertz. I think based on yesterday's performance, Fran Kirby may go ahead and just break that prediction, because she put in some absolutely incredible service to Sam Kerr. And I think it's a trend that you kind of see continuing. I mean, she, you know, kind of in the glory days when she was winning player of the season, you know, she would go on these incredible counterattacks and kind of be one-on-one and have some really open field ahead of her. She was, I think, played much closer yesterday, but still was able to kind of wriggle free and put in some insane service. We were texting in our group during the match, Katie, that she just looks super, super sharp, and not every player necessarily was feeling like that. So she really stood out to us.
Yeah, I was saying in my report that this is not the fittest I can remember Kirby being, and with the caveat that when towards the end of her campaign last season, it was obviously cut short because she last played in November. She was obviously ill and had this undiagnosed condition, so she definitely obviously would look very leggy. But even before that, I can't remember her looking this fit and sharp and just focused with the bit between her teeth. And I think everything you said is absolutely right, that it's not just the assists that you were pointing out, but the shoulder drops and the runs and the bits of skill and magic that you're seeing is very much the player that she was for them when she won the Player of the Year award in, I can't remember what year that would be now, but it's sort of like you're seeing the Kirby of old, but with a little bit extra on top as well. And I think one thing that was really intriguing for me was her link up first half with Mara Mielder, the right back, because I've kind of felt for a while that Mielder is criminally underrated, because she's sort of not discussed in the same bracket as Lucy Bronze, because she's obviously not as good as someone who is the best right back in the world, but she's certainly kind of owned that position for Chelsea and made some really, really valuable contributions. So I think it's a shame that she sort of overlooked in the discussions about the best right backs in the Super League.
Yeah, I think it's so refreshing to see Kirby kind of reclaiming this spot and building her way back into the side. I think anytime that player is out for an extended period, you wonder what the reacclimatization is going to look like and how they put their stamp back into their game. And, you know, I think it's reminiscent of players we've seen kind of in the, you know, in the men's team. And I think, you know, who've kind of had to come back from long-term injuries. You know, I think we're starting to see N'Golo Kanté looking like he's kind of coming back to health after being out for an extended period of time. And so this is as important as any new signing that Chelsea were going to make, getting a healthy Fran Kirby back, who, you know, has the, not just the ability to influence the squad, but is a little bit of the torchbearer for Emma Hayes is really exciting. It's I don't know. I'm giddy about it. It's definitely, you know, we should all be excited that Fran is back and healthy, Brandon.
Yeah, look, she was one of the first big players at Chelsea Women to like break through, make it on the big stage, was like in England campaigns, Nike campaigns. I mean, she broke through. So I think a lot of us have a deeper connection with her just because we've known her for longer. And so for us, it's like us, to your point, seeing Ruben Loftus-Cheek coming back, you're like, you're rooting for him just like you're rooting for her. She's Chelsea. She's been there. We want to see her succeed. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk about rotation, preparation, upcoming matches, the league table. We're going to zoom out a little bit and have a little bit more of a perspective. But thank you to the sponsor for supporting the show financially. We will be right back. All right, here we go. Back in it. Rotation, preparation, or ... since you can't read the script. Once Man United scored, as you put it in your article for The Telegraph, Katie, with nonchalance that would have been comedic were it not so impressive, Chelsea responded by summoning, off the bench, last season's WSL Player of the Year and the world's most expensive female player in Bethany England and Pernilla Harder, respectively. Katie, how difficult do you think it will be for Emma to land the right lineup week to week, given the abundance of talent she's blessed with? And I know she's come out in the public and said she is blessed to have this problem. It is not a curse.
If there was any manager I would sort of back to be able to solve that issue, and it is a very nice issue to have, it's not sort of a curse or anything like that, it would be her. And I think for the reason that she is very tactically astute and has for several years, I think, managed a kind of, particularly last season, the combination of Bethany England, Sam Kerr, Guru Wright and G, knowing how to play those together and how to structure them so that they feed off each other's strengths. And I think it's quite telling that we saw the beginnings of a really fruitful partnership last season between Sam Kerr and Bethany England, and now the first two games of this season we've seen Fran Kirby and Sam Kerr linking up really, really well. So I think that that's probably a good indication of how she reads the game and how she understands her players' strengths, and that she's been able to take two very different players in Kirby and England and structure them in a way that creates opportunities for Sam Kerr and really plays for to Kerr's strengths. So I think that she's probably very capable of doing that. I think another thing that's going to be very instrumental to that is how she sells the Chelsea vision to the players. And I think we've seen that in the last 2 years. She's had a very clear plan of what she wants to do in terms of growing the women's game. And she's talked extensively before about how when I started at Chelsea 10 years ago, I only had a chair and a desk, and now I've got this big training complex. So I think her vision and her strategy for the game in that sense is very key for getting players on board. And you hear from a lot of players who are at the club and not just kind of one that you're having off the record chat, so they're not even consciously bigging them up in interviews, but just the amount of care and facilities and services you have access to at Chelsea is just so streets ahead from so many clubs around the world. And I think incorporating players into that plan is key. And you've even heard Pernille Harder said that this week, that the big thing was Emma Hayes saying, we're going to win the Champions League and we want to win the Champions League and we want to be the best team in Europe. So I think roping players into that vision and really getting to buy into that vision is going to be just as key as the amount of game time they get and the amount of minutes they end up with at the end of the season.
One of the things that I'm kind of interested on your perspective on is just getting to see Harder play yesterday, even in substitute, kind of in person. What was your take on how she fit in the squad? I think we saw the one off the ball run where she let the ball kind of track ahead. And you know, I think it's always nice when you have a player who doesn't have to receive the ball at their feet, but actually can kind of run up to the ball and kind of pick it up in attack. What was your opinion on her performance yesterday, kind of just jumping right in? And what does her signing, I think, reflect for kind of Chelsea as a whole and maybe the WSL?
I mean, I think it was a lively, it was only 10 minutes. So that's obviously the difficulty of judging it. It was such a short, almost cameo appearance. But I think it was a lively spell and you did sort of see the makings of the runs that she makes at Wolfsburg, and some of the way that she worked the channels was very typical Pernille Harder for anyone who sort of watched her at length. And I think the one chance that she had, she sort of slid in at the back post. I don't think she made contact with the ball, but that was very typical, I think, of a lot of the goals she scored against Glasgow in the Champions League were those kind of really nice runs and then opportunistic strikers finishing. So she's a really nice blend, I think, of a poacher and someone who can be involved really extensively in the build-up play. In terms of what it means for Chelsea, I think it's something that we've all sort of discussed in articles and on Twitter, and the same sort of line that everyone else has been going with, that it just really reiterates, one, how much the WSL has grown and how the WSL is a real place to be and a hotspot for a lot of players around the world. And they said that a few years ago. I think Emma Hayes predicted that when Barclays came on board as title sponsors for the WSL and made a massive, huge investment, that this is one of the earliest professional leagues in the world and was going to really be a nice hotspot for women's football and for players around the world. And I think you're starting to see that. I think it's, from Chelsea's perspective, a real assertion of what they want in the Champions League now, that they came, plus they've had semi-finals before, but they've never kind of got there and gone all the way and become the best team in Europe. So I think for them to stockpile talent with the likes of Sam Kerr and Pernille Harder, you are looking at a squad that's probably the only one in Europe that can really, man for man, rival Lyon's in terms of just the personnel they have on board. So now it's a question of, can they go one further and outplay them in over two legs or in a final in the Champions League?
I like the sound of that. Let's do that.
A quick follow, though, Katie, because I think for fans who might have just tuned in yesterday, who didn't watch the Community Shield, Beth England not getting the start in two straight matches probably would ring the alarm bells for some folks. Do you think that this is a conscious, you know, building of a second 11 just due to fixture congestion and the fact that there's so much talent on the squad? Or do you think that just right now she's just not a kind of starting member of the squad? Do you have any indication?
I think from what I've heard, it was that she had an appendix operation in the extended off season, so she's just kind of a little bit shy of that full fitness that Kirby and Kerr and everybody are firing at. So I think it's probably not something that we can draw a conclusion from yet, would be my comment on that.
Okay, well, fair. I know it's early season. All right. But we do have to look at the table. OK, we're not predicting anything off of this. But as it stands, remember, there are 12 teams in the WSL. Arsenal are on top. Everton second. Brighton and Hove Albion third. Manchester City fourth. Chelsea fifth. United sixth. Tottenham seventh. West Ham eighth. Aston Villa nine. Birmingham City 10. Bristol City 11. And Reading 12. Again, one match has been played. A lot of goal difference and alphabetical order splitting teams between all of the table. But look, I think, Katie, is it fair to expect it's usually the Man City, Chelsea, Arsenal show at the end of the season?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you could, on yesterday's performance, wonder if Manchester United are going to break into that top three, and that's the big challenge for them this season. But even, I think you can make a lot of allowances for yesterday's performance. I think with it being the first game back, Chelsea weren't the only team that we've seen and thought they're not at full pace yet. I'd be very surprised if it doesn't finish Chelsea, champions, and then I always switch between Arsenal and City for second. But I think based on yesterday's performances of the weekend, I would put Arsenal as second. But I think a lot of people sort of underestimated them because they didn't strengthen, I think, with the depth that Chelsea and City did. But then I think you saw their performance of the weekend that it was a reminder of the talent that they do have and just how wise the players that they brought in were in terms of fitting in with what they've already got.
How exciting is it from a perspective of watching, you know, we're seeing players that we root for in our U.S. women's national team make the move with kind of saying they're not going to play in the NWSL season. They're going to opt out, and they're making the move over to the WSL. We saw it with Rose Lavelle. We're potentially going to see it with Press and Heath potentially going to United. I know you mentioned that Short was a little short in her response on whether that was or was going to happen yesterday. So how... And maybe just as someone who's covering the game and covering the WSL, like how exciting is that to see this kind of movement at this moment? And what do you think that means for the league?
Yeah, I think everyone was saying with kind of no hyperbole or exaggeration that this is sort of the best, strongest on paper WSL that we've seen. And certainly between that top three, I think it's going to be closer than it's ever been before. Because last season's win was really close. And now they've kind of added so much stardust with the names that they have brought in. So from our perspective as journalists, I think it's the most exciting season. I think the only lingering worry for us is whether those top three, whether you're seeing kind of a divide emerge, because those top three are then ahead of the next two in Man United and Everton, who are then slightly ahead of Spurs, West Ham, who are then slightly ahead of the ones underneath that. So that's, we kind of have always said that it's a league with real competitive balance, but I don't think the top three have dropped many points in the last few years or lost to. I think there's someone talking the stat and I can't remember, but I think it's that they haven't lost to anyone outside of the top three for sort of the last 3 or 4 years. So it's that kind of competitive balance in terms of who's rivaling them have sort of starting to wane a little bit, and it's really sort of up to United and Everton to upset the apple cart, as it were, or the kind of order of things at the moment. So that's the worry for us. But in terms of those top three and the amount of international, I mean, it's been unprecedented for us to watch Australia and America all won by viewing rights for the league, and for people tweeting saying we're watching in this country and that country. So the kind of global appeal of it, and we never expected that this quickly, particularly on the back of a summer where there hasn't been any women's sport because of coronavirus, for it to come back with this much of a bang, I think has been a real relief moment for a lot of us.
Awesome. I appreciate that perspective for sure. I guess we're spoiled. Like they're here. We're used to them playing. We're used to them being amazing. So it's cool to see them kind of trying out another league and coming over to England, obviously.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear from your perspective, having asked me about the English side. What do you think players like Rose Lavelle, and if they come, Press and Heath, will bring to the WSL? Because we've only seen them in World Cup matches, and she believes cup games, as people who have seen them a lot more closely in the NWSL. What can we expect from them?
I mean, Nick, while we all followed the Women's World Cup, I definitely think you have the closest kind of sense on that yourself. I'll let you lead.
So yeah, Rose Lavelle is by the next World Cup going to be our best player. I don't necessarily think it'll be that close. She's supremely talented. Can play as a deep running eight. She can play as a 10. Obviously scored a fantastic goal in the World Cup final that most people will remember. So she is a prime talent, along with Sam Mewis, who I think is criminally underrated, moving to City. Those are two good players that came to the league. Tobin Heath and Kristen Press are more experienced, longer running internationals. Press is kind of a Aubameyang, better off the wing, but can play as a lone striker. She has a fantastic shot on her, really powerful shot. And then Tobin Heath is the most skilled women's player I've ever seen.
Really that good.
On the ball, she is absurdly talented, and does Rabonas for fun in games. I mean, she's going to be a hell of a lot of fun to watch if you're a Manchester United fan. So yeah, the profile of these players is, you know, these are some of the best of the best of the best that are coming through, and it should be a lot of fun.
I mean, I agree. Tobin Heath has just buckets of swagger when she's on the field. Her confidence, she knows that whatever she wants the ball to do in her mind, her feet can do it, and it's wildly impressive. I'm personally a huge Christian Press fan, but that's because I think she just is one of the most tireless workers, will do whatever the team needs, and to Nick's point, can still smash one in when it's needed.
Well, I think it's interesting because we, for the last year, have been the beneficiaries of getting to enjoy watching our countryman and Christian Pulisic play for Chelsea, and have had to you know, have had one up on our fellow Americans, because we could be like, ah, you kind of have to root for him to at least be good here so that it brings an influence back to the men's national team when he plays, because you want to be in good form. And now it's a little bit of the opposite, because, yeah, I think I love, you know, Rose Lavelle is probably my favorite. And so having to want her to do well at City, but not want City to do well enough because I want Chelsea to win, is the inverse of that effect. And so it's going to be really weird from a rooting perspective, because I think we're going to be rooting for all of these players to do extremely well, not just to help the WSL kind of improve on a global stage, but when the, you know, next Women's World Cup kind of, you know, gets ready, that they've kind of grown from this international experience that, you know, some of them are getting for the first time. And so, I think we're excited. It's not often that, you know, America has been able to export our talent in the global footballing community. And so this is a really nice opportunity, I think, for a lot of people maybe to get used to these players outside of, you said, Katie, like the She Believes or the World Cup scenario.
Really weird for us as well, because we were used to, for a long time, our best talent going over into the college system. So to then see that come back the other way and have players, even the ones who have come on short loans like Jess Fishlock and Rachel Daly, is quite, it's just a bit of a strange thing to get used to. You're a bit like, oh, whenever you see one, it's a bit of a surprise. But yeah, it's good. It's good fun.
It's weird for us. We're so desperate for our league to succeed. I think we should also say that so to have some of the best players go. But at the end of the day, we want the players in the best system to develop, to become even better, to raise their profile, to them to be able to, you know, yes, just take care of themselves and their families like they should be.
And in the pandemic, you can't fault anybody for making the decisions that they're making right now. I mean, that's kind of the undercurrent for all this is look, I mean, it's a tough situation. If you don't have a bubble in the States right now, it's hard to play matches without kind of the risk associated with the coronavirus. So you cannot fault anybody for making the best decision for them and their health.
No chance. All right, well, before we wrap, we do need to remind you all that Chelsea women's next match will be on September 13th against one Bristol City. Katie, I'm not gonna lie, I know nothing about Bristol City women. I don't know if they've been in the league for a long time. If not, all I know is that right now they currently sit in 11th out of 12th. Mm-hmm. What should we be aware of heading into this match?
I think they had a really difficult season last year. The season before, I think they were sixth, which was kind of a record high for them. And then it all sort of tailed off last season. And I don't know if that was a big dip for them or that was them kind of reverting to their level, but they just had some really heavy defeats and were really struggling at the bottom. And a few seasons ago, we saw them really going toe-to-toe and stealing points off Manchester City and really having a say in the title race because they were getting points off the big three and really causing troubles for them. But I think now you've sort of seen that wane slightly a little bit. So I'll be very surprised if they are the side that they were a few years ago. I think that this is perhaps the game where we really see Chelsea turn a team over, because this is the club that lost, was it 11-1 to Arsenal when Vivi Miedema got two hat-tricks and four assists or whatever it was he got in that ridiculous game. So it is a team that I don't think they're the weakest in the WSL. I think there are so many teams that don't have the strength that they have and are weak and far weaker than they are. But I think it's a team that I do sort of fear for coming up against the side like Chelsea.
All right. So we should.
It's not good. It's not good when the tagline is you fear for that side going up against Chelsea.
Look, I think then we can kind of take our point, build. We got to add three, Nick, and get to four and then continue to just build and build and build from there to the season. But I guess better Bristol selfishly than Arsenal, for example.
There is no margin for error in this league. So you really have to put the teams at the bottom of the table away and focus on the four matches that you're going to have coming up against City and Arsenal throughout the season and ensure that you can kind of take maximum points there. So I would expect that Chelsea will do the business. Perhaps this is a chance for Sam Kerr to get an actual hat trick instead of a missed hat trick. So very excited about that.
I think that's right, though, what you were saying about you've got to take points off of everyone because it is such a tight league. I mean, with 12 teams, what we have seen in previous years is that the teams that have lost out in the title are not necessarily the ones that have lost out in the heads-to-heads up against the big three. It's the teams that have failed to take points off the Bristols, the Reddings, the Birmingham's the sort of teams down at the bottom that you need to win against, but they've given them really, really tough games.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Katie, thank you for jumping on the podcast, sharing your knowledge. We appreciate it. We're looking for more awesome resources like you, so we'll definitely be sharing out all of your Twitter and the articles and things like that as we get it, just to make sure people can go dive into your work. So again, thank you.
No, thank you for having me. It's been good fun.
We appreciate it. Another win for the Americans that we're not messing it up. We're getting in there. No, we appreciate that. Dan and Nick, obviously, gentlemen, always appreciate having you on. The listeners, you are the best part about it. So tweet at us, comment on Instagram. If you're in our Discord, you know we have a Chelsea women's thread. And that discussion was hopping yesterday during the match. Was loving to see it. So if you're looking for a group to talk about Chelsea women with, we've got one. So that's going to wrap us up. But until next time, Chelsea fans, you know what to do. Keep the blue flag flying high.